Greetings, everyone. Welcome to Sabbath Services. Happy to be here. Had an excellent trip down to Orlando, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, and Manchester, New Hampshire. And counting everyone up, we had 40 in Orlando, and we had about 58 in Atlanta. We had about the same number up in Manchester, so we were pretty close to 160 brethren that were able to see. And we'll send out two of the sermons because the ones on the holy days would be a repeat of what you already have. And because there has been, again, and some of these things come in cycles, you know. Doctrinal questions or doctrinal beliefs or things like this. And we have to understand something very important, which is this. What we personally believe that is at variance with the Word of God is of no consequence. It doesn't matter if you're sincere, because everybody is sincere. It's the question of truth, and it's the question of judgment. So, we've had some difficulties with some false doctrines beginning to circulate around. One of them was Melchizedek not being Christ, so we have two messages on that. I've already covered that. Another one is that there is not tithing in the New Testament because it does not say you shall tithe. And so in Atlanta, I gave a sermon on tithing and what it should be. Now, those who are retired and do not have an increase from labor, of course you don't tithe. But the thing that's important to realize is this. We have examples of the widow who put in the two mites, which was all she had. Okay. We have examples of people who give everything that they have. And those who don't believe in tithing, I have learned through the years, that say, well, we ought to give more than a tithe. Okay. Do they? See? Never happened. So I just want to review part of a sermon that I gave in Atlanta, 1 Corinthians 9. And it's always a hang-up. Why didn't Paul take tithes from the Corinthians? They don't ask whether he took them from the other congregations. See? But he let the congregations handle it locally, and they took care of Paul. He said he took wages, okay? Meaning that the rest was for the benefit of the brethren, okay? Now today we have an opportunity to do more with what we have because of all the technology that's available to us. And God would certainly expect us to do it. You know, would the Apostle Paul fly if there were airplanes in his day? I do believe he would. Do you think he would do recordings like we're doing now? I believe he would. That way all of those renegade churches in Galatia could see him. See? And that way he could personally stand down some of these false apostles. So there are just a couple of verses here that I want to cover. Verse 11. He says, if we've sown to you spiritual things, is it any great thing if we shall reap your spiritual things? If others participate in this authority over you, much more surely should not we, because Paul and Timothy and Titus were the ones who established the church at Corinth. But as you get to 2 Corinthians, you have false apostles. And they were the ones who were taking them, and they said they were Israelites, and they said they were Hebrews, so they were probably also Levites. So they were probably saying, hey, you're to give to the Levites. Okay. Nevertheless, we did not use this authority. Well, it's like this. If you have a car in your garage, Do you have a car? Do you own it? Yes, indeed. But what if you never use it? Does that mean the car no longer exists? No. He just didn't use it because he wanted to prove a point to the Corinthians, and he wanted them to grow to a spiritual point of understanding the scriptures so that they would freely choose to give rather than tell them directly. So here in 1 Corinthians 9, we see that he tells them very directly. He says, "Nevertheless, we have not used this authority, but we've endured all things so that we might not hinder the gospel of Christ. Don't you know, that those who are laboring at the sacred things of the temple live of the things of the temple?" Now, what is that? Tithes? Offerings? Is that not true? Yes, indeed. "And those ministering at the altar are partakers of the altar." So they would share in the sacrifices. Now notice verse 14. And I had to repeat this 3 or 4 times because we took a break right in the sermon right here at this point. And then some came up and we had some discussions of it, see? So then I had to go back and read verse 14. "In the same way also the Lord did command that those who preach the gospel should live of the gospel." Now notice it is in the same way. As what? Those at the temple and the altar. What did that include? See? And so I hope you pay attention to the sermon that I gave on. It's called Tithing in the New Testament. And also, if you want the series, we have Tithing in the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament. And if tithes were given to Melchizedek, does that not precede what was given to the Levites? Is that not the primary emphasis to begin with? And who is our high priest? Jesus Christ, after the order of Melchizedek. And he's delegated those things to men because he's chosen to use men. So, other than that, we had a very, very good trip. Good weather, no tornadoes, no rain, and I was able to pace it just right. I was in Orlando on Thursday and then flew up to Atlanta on Friday. So I was able to exercise in Orlando and exercise in Atlanta 2 days because I came up there on Friday. Then we had Sabbath services, and then I left on Sunday at 3 p.m., and the first time Delta had a direct flight to Manchester, New Hampshire, in a decent plane, an MB-88. That's a McDonnell Douglas 88. And we had decent seats. Before, it was in one of these little small regional jets, you know, from Canada, and you sit there like this for 2 hours, you know. And that doesn't work too well. And then the flight coming home worked really well, and I remembered where I parked my car this time. And all the brethren said to say hello. They're very happy. And those who received the videos like you're receiving them here, very happy to receive them. And since that time, getting back here this last week, we've had record tornadoes. Now, the last time it came close to this, very interesting, was in the first year of Jimmy Carter's presidency. So the question is, with all the things that have happened and are happening, who does God hold responsible? Or who is at fault? I'm sure a lot of people would like to say, well, it's Obama's fault. No, it's not his fault. But think of it. Right here while we're sitting here, we've had earthquakes, haven't we? We had the big one in Indonesia with the tsunami. Then we had Haiti and Chile and New Zealand, now Japan. And, of course, living here on the left coast, you know, someone said what happened to California was it's on the left coast and they tipped the country up and all the fruits and nuts rolled down here, see. Hey, well, that's not quite exactly so, but anyway. Okay. And the power of that earthquake was something. It moved the whole island eight feet northeast. And that sits right on the deepest part of the ocean where there is the, you know, the fault line. So who's to know where it's going to hit next? And another little byproduct here that came out just yesterday, a news report saying that the sun is now sending out particles which are neutralizing the radiation in the air. And the scientists are all going crazy, emailing back and forth to each other, because this destroys the theory of the gradual decline of radioactivity in carbon-14, which means that their whole theory of evolution and everything is kaput. Their whole theory on how old everything is no longer works. So God is taking care of the radioactivity. Okay? Now we also have volcanoes, tornadoes, floods and rain, drought. In Oklahoma and Texas, they're in a drought. In North Dakota and Wisconsin and Minnesota, they have floods. Down south, they have tornadoes. Now, who knows what's going to happen when hurricane season comes? Last year, what happened? They were expecting 17 to make landfall. Well, I think one or two came close, and that was it. So even a scientist can't predict what's going on. And then we've covered like the roaring of the nations. How many times have we covered that? It's still going on. Then look at the problems with drugs, illegal and legal, crime. Look at the banking system, the financial system. And look at the lying, cheating, stealing, and murdering that's going on here in America and every place else in the world. Okay? Then look at the governments. They're corrupt. They have stupid leaders, and we're not exempt. Then look at the religions. Wow. That's something. We'll look at some of those. So we have idolatry. And now, right now, with the marriage of William and Catherine Middleton for King and Queen of England, and he's been privately tutored by Queen Elizabeth. So right in the middle of that, we have this big celebration of this wedding with all of these things going on. And it's kind of surreal when you look at the world and see what's going on, and yet to understand how many people are still able to work and function and get along and do different things like that. That's not to say that the unemployment things are not true. They're bad. See? Okay? And then you have the churches of God. Now, we need to also consider this in finding out, because we're going to examine who's at fault. Do the churches of God have their fault in it? Look at the false doctrines. Look at the way they treat each other. I also gave a sermon on the love of God among the brethren, because that's the greatest thing that's missing. And a lot of people have been so hurt by the hierarchy that they have not yet recovered emotionally. And part of the problem is that they haven't put the full burden on Christ and accepted the fact that they also were participating in this. So how much fault comes down on the churches of God? See? Because God looks at the whole world, and he looks at every little thing individually as well. Then we've got Satan the devil running around as a roaring lion, right? Seeking whom he may devour. So what are we supposed to do? Who's at fault? Why are we being judged this way? Well, let's first of all come to Matthew 24. Because as I have mentioned before in the past, it's very interesting that yes, nearly all of these things took place with the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. And as a matter of fact, Bob Ellsworth, who is continuing to sell the Bibles, and they're selling it at a steady pace, not like when he first started because of economic things, but at a steady pace. So he came up to get supply of Bibles and everything. And he gave me a little book written by a man in 1814, The Destruction of Jerusalem. And I didn't know it. They were believing in the rapture in 1814. Did you know that? So what he did, he showed that everything in Matthew 24 happened to that generation, which is true. Everything did, but what? The sign of the Son of Man. Okay? Now, let's come down here to verse 32, Matthew 24. And like Roger and I were talking before services, down through time, everyone has expected Christ to return in their lifetime, right? Yes. Why? Because these same things keep happening over and over and over and over again. And so we focus on what is going on rather than looking at the big picture and realizing that certain things have got to happen before the end can really come. What are the two things that must happen before the last week or 7 years of Daniel 9? One, there has to be the rise of the beast power, king of the north. And number two, there has to be the covenant made between Israel and the beast power. That begins the last 7 years. All these other things build up toward the end. And some of them are just types. And they will repeat themselves because it comes to a certain point and then stops. Then goes back and repeats itself. Now let's view Matthew 24 from this point of view. It has to do with modern communications, that everybody on earth is going to know that these things are taking place. See, because he says, now learn this parable of the fig tree. When it puts its branches, when its branches have already become tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. In like manner also, when you see all. Now notice the word all. All these things know that it is near. Then you have to add other scriptures in to do it. Okay? And the great tribulation cannot take place until the abomination of desolation stands in the holy place, which means there must be a temple built, although they could offer some sacrifices before a temple is built. But do you think that after all that the Jews have gone through in history, that today they would be satisfied with a earth altar made of whole stones And that's a sacred place to offer some kind of sacrifice? No way possible. So there has to be a temple. So then you can start backing up all of these things. Now let's pick it up here in verse 3. And as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, his disciples came to him alone, saying, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of your coming and the completion of the age?" Then Jesus answered and said to them, "Be on guard so that no one deceives you." And that has to be on an ongoing basis, doesn't it? Yes. "For many shall come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and they shall deceive many." And a many means a majority of people. Look at it today. Let's look at it through the lens of what is happening today. This time, not the historical lens. This time, the current lens. All right? Do we have many? And it talks about false prophets down here a little later, so we'll add that in here. Do we have a lot of false prophets? More than ever before, don't we? Do we have false prophets within the churches of God? More than ever before. Do we have false doctrines within the churches of God? I couldn't say more than ever before, but we still have. See? Because people still, even though they're in the church of God, many have really not made up their minds that they want the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, and to love God the way that they should. All right, verse 6, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars." Boy, we know instantly when any of those things take place, don't we? We have them today. "The strangest alliance that looks like it may come to pass is Saudi Arabia and Israel and Jordan against Iran." Now, that would be strange bedfellows, wouldn't it? Have enemies come together for convenience in the past? Yes, indeed. How about Germany and Russia, 1939. Okay. "Wars and rumors of wars. See that you do not let these things disturb you, for it's necessary that all these things take place, but the end is not yet. Nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famine and pestilence and earthquakes in different places." That's what's going on everywhere as you look around the world. And famine can hit really quickly today. And many people don't know how vulnerable that modern cities are. I mean, here in America, you could have all the motorcycle gangs go out there, work with M13, work with other groups, cut off water supply, cut off trucking routes to the cities, and you could have instant famine within days. Because everything that is in the city that you buy at the store must be transported. Okay, they could also blow up main rail lines. So those things could happen. And he says, verse 8, "Now all these things are the beginning of sorrows." I've said in the past, I don't know if we're quite yet there, but I would have to say, with all the things going on, where in 60 seconds you can come from prosperity to poverty through earthquakes, through fire, through tornadoes, through hurricanes, through volcanoes, through war. I mean, look at those poor people down there in the areas where the tornadoes came. All of a sudden, bam, there's nothing left. And everything is just twisted all up in piles of junk. Not too much different than what happened over there in Japan with the earthquake and then the tsunami. Everybody lost everything that they've had. So don't look at the physical things as if, you know, you have it made because you have physical things. Because those can go. That's why the one to trust is God. Not other human beings. Not what you have. I mean, you could even have a protective bomb shelter in the basement of your home, and there could be a disaster which would bury you there. Now, you were safely buried, correct? or you may have an earthquake that while you're sitting there crushes you like so much hamburger. See? And you know, it's that's why I want to cover who's at fault. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Jesus said, be careful, don't do that. All right? Then they shall deliver you up to affliction. That's happened in the past. It's going to happen in the future. And shall kill you. Happened in the past. It's happening today. It'll happen in the future. And you shall be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Now, how can we be hated by all nations for Jesus' sake unless this would be able to be communicated worldwide, huh? How could that be? And then many shall be led into sin and shall betray one another and hate one another. What do we have? Secret hotlines you can call and report on anyone, on anything. And many false prophets shall arise and deceive many, and because lawlessness shall be multiplied, the love of many shall grow cold, even within the churches of God. But the one who endures to the end, that one shall be saved. Then we have the next one, and this gospel of the kingdom shall be proclaimed in all the world for a witness to all nations. And that has to be at the end time with modern communication. Can't come any other way. Plus the distribution of Bibles. Now, we've got the real thing. We've got many, many Bibles, don't we, huh? Now we have digital Bibles. I saw a man, I was sitting next to a man on the plane coming home, and he had his iPad. And he was going, and the pictures were, you know, come back and on. And so I sat there and watched him do it for, off and on for maybe an hour. And so I asked him, I said, well, how do you like your iPad? He says, oh, I love it. He says, it's almost replaced my laptop. I said, really? I said, is it heavy? Oh, he says, no. So he folded it up, let me lift it. It was very light. And if the plane would have had Wi-Fi on it, he could have downloaded Church at Home right there. See? And Church at Home, we have in half-hour segments, which is exactly what you need to download into a computer or to a BlackBerry or to a cell phone or to an iPhone. And be careful you don't put your whole life on your iPhone, because if you lose it, whoopee-doo. Okay? Now, there's some developments happening with the preparing for the mark of the beast. And I said in one of the sermons that it's way, way down the road. And I didn't mean a long way off. I meant the development is way, way down the road for its application. They have selected the city of Salt Lake City, Utah, to be the city that is going to develop the prototype of wave technology. Have you heard of wave technology? Wave technology is that you have sensors that you can take your iPhone or your BlackBerry, and it has your bank account on it, okay? Has all the things that you need for being able to buy and sell. So you get on the bus and you wave your phone. Ding! No more collecting fares, see? Go to a restaurant, wave it by that. That's what it is, the wave technology, you see? Rings it up. They're going to set it up so the whole city's going to operate that way. Department stores, restaurants, banks, all businesses, even individuals. You can now conduct individual business from iPhone to iPhone. They also have the little portable card swipers. Well, they will have that converted to wave technology. And that will be the last step before the mark of the beast. Now, this is on a 5-year plan in Salt Lake City. So we'll see what happens. And it's interesting that they chose Salt Lake City because it's a very religious state, the whole thing. So if they can get people up there to accept this technology and tell us how wonderful that it is, see, the next step is identity theft is going to be so rampant when that comes in that they're going to have to say, well, we now have to put it on the right hand or on the forehead. And it's going to be just like I heard today on the news. In a few weeks, all Social Security recipients will have mandatory direct deposit. No more paper checks. So that's how it's going to come. See? All right, so I don't know how the gospel is going to be proclaimed in all the world for a witness to all nations, and then the end shall come. I look at the churches of God, and they're pitiful. Absolutely pitiful. Brings tears to your eyes. I pray for all of them every day. And I pray for repentance for the people of God and the ministers of God, that they stop their silliness and their vanity things. Yield to Christ. Be led of the Holy Spirit, not your own devices. See? That's what it has to be. Anyone who tries to do that, you're labeled as some terrible, terrible thing. I know what that's like. I've gone through it. So we don't know what's going to happen to the churches of God. But I can tell you this much right now. We're in pitiful shape. Thankful for the internet. We can reach a lot of people with the internet at a very low cost. But look at all that's on there. So God has to draw the people. Okay? So we'll have to see what's going to happen here. All right? Let's look at one more prophecy here in Matthew 7. And then we'll see if we can find out who does God hold responsible for all these things taking place? Because they're all the result of sin. Every single one of them. All right? Let's pick it up here in verse 12. Therefore, everything that you would have men do to you, Matthew 7, verse 12, so also do to them, for this is the law and the prophets. And yet the very religious leaders who are supposed to teach the truth and the law and the prophets say it's been abolished. But they want to be treated rightly. Okay? Enter in through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many are those who enter through it. See, people want it easy, they want it smooth. And today we have it easy and we have it smooth, don't we? What are we doing in the good days? Are we yielding to God and growing and overcoming? Are we working? Are we producing? We better. God has given us all of these things. But what's going to happen when the good days are gone? For narrow is the gate and difficult is the way that leads to light, and few are those who find it. It's a conundrum. But beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, for within they are ravening wolves. And we are at the height of the full blossom development of the major religions of the world and their false prophets. And it's interesting, isn't it? Right while the wedding was going on in London and everyone was happy and cheerful, well, they had something else going on in Rome. They were digging up the casket of John Paul II so that they can make him a saint, so that people can worship him. See? False prophets everywhere and in the churches of God. So it's difficult. Okay, you shall know them by their fruits. They do not gather grapes from thorns or figs from thistles, do they? In the same way, every good tree produces good fruit, but a corrupt tree produces evil fruit. Let's see how a corrupt religion works. Let's go to Isaiah 30. Here we are in Isaiah 30. Let's pick it up here in verse 8. Now here's a prophecy for our day. and we can see how true this is. Verse 8, now go write it before them in a tablet and note it in a book so that it may be for the time to come forever and ever. That is the time of the end. That this is a rebellious people, lying children, deceived and being deceived. They are children who will not hear the law of the Lord. Try the Sabbath. When you get done with that, try the Passover and Holy Days. And then you will see the numbers drop. Who say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, do not prophesy to us right things, speak to us smooth things, prophesy illusions. All right, try the Sunday morning Trinity Channel. See what you see. Go out of the way, turn aside, out of the path, cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. See, that's what they say when they're confronted with the truth. Don't go in the truth. And why is it? When disaster is at hand, people believe false prophets that it's not going to happen. You know, I remember first time I started preaching on, hey, there's too much debt around here, just paraphrasing it, in the government and in personal lives. And it's all going to come due one day. And guess what? We're weeks away from a major confrontation with it, right? Yes, we are. And at that time, I said, if you've got money in the bank, buy some gold, buy some silver. That was in 1995. Oh, well, I can't do that. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. And I've got my money in the bank. They never think the bank is going to fail. Okay? But money in the bank can go to money heaven. Gold and silver you have. But still to this day, I talk to those who buy and sell gold. And there are people today sitting on hundreds of thousands of dollars in banks. They're afraid to buy gold. They're afraid to buy silver. And so they watch the price go up and up and up and up and say, well, I should do that. Yes, but it's like standing there at the train station and here comes a train and it's going to where you want to go. Say, oh, well, no, I'll catch the next train. So here comes the next train. It's going where you want to go. You say, oh, no, I'll wait till the next time. And so you wait for the next train. It comes. You stand there. You say, well, I'm not ready yet. So then you wait a little longer and you say, well, I'll wait for the next train. Finally, you're standing there looking and looking and looking and looking. So you ask the conductor, where is the train coming that's going to go to such and such a place? He said, there aren't any more. See? Some people are that way. They don't believe the disaster until it's upon them. Verse 12, therefore, thus says the Holy One of Israel, because you have despised this word and trust in oppression and perverseness and rely on them, therefore this iniquity shall be to you as a breach ready to fall, swelling out in a high wall, whose breaking comes suddenly in an instant. See, instead of the train arriving, now the disaster. And he shall break it as the breaking of a potter's vessel that is smashed in pieces, and he shall not spare so that there shall not be found in the fragments a shard to take fire from the hearth or to take water out of the pit. So there we are. We're standing right on the brink. Have you heard him say? Those who are truthful enough to say, we are facing a great catastrophe because of the debt. Can you cut enough to make it work? Answer, only temporary. That's why the kingdom of God has to come. We better learn the lesson that only the kingdom of God and Christ returning is going to save us from these things. Okay, let's go ahead and take a little break, and we'll come back here after the break.